It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for. Sandy Rios with you on this bright Monday morning. Not such a bright morning for the John McCain family, who passed away on Saturday at the age of 81. John, of course, had served in the Senate since something like 1987, like 31 years, and before that, 4 to 6 years in the U.S. House of Representatives, and before that, 20-plus years as a naval officer. He served 5 years in a prisoner of war camp in Vietnam, and 23 years, I guess, as a Navy aviator. He flew 23 combat missions in Vietnam before he was captured. And he married Cindy, his wife, in 1980. The family, of course, is grieving. He died Saturday after they had just announced on Friday that he would stop chemotherapy treatments. And so he passed away on Saturday. His wife, Cindy, says, "My heart is broken. I'm so lucky to have lived the adventure of loving this incredible man for 38 years. He passed the way he lived, on his own terms, surrounded by the people he loved in the place he loved best." His daughter Megan says, "I love you forever, my beloved father." And on Fox yesterday, Chris Wallace, of course, had John McCain on a lot. Lindsey Graham and John McCain seem to be his two favorite Republicans. And they played a montage of appearances of John McCain on Fox, and I thought you might enjoy remembering. Let's listen.
After everything you've been through, Senator, you've also been quoted as saying that you feel you're one of the luckiest people on earth and that you feel a certain, not to get highfalutin about it, a sense of destiny. Do you feel that you have one final mission to serve this country?
I've been blessed to be able to serve for many, many years, both in the military and in public office. It's one of the great honors of my life, but it doesn't mean that I was meant to be president. It just means that whatever time I have left, I would be of service to the country. And I am grateful, incredibly grateful that I've had the opportunity. And if it stops tomorrow, I will look back at an imperfect person, but one who always tried to serve.
I fought against my own administration when I wanted to, when I thought it was necessary to do so, and I will fight against this administration when I think it's necessary to do so.
But if I may press it, it isn't what other people are saying about you, it's what you're saying about yourself. Yeah. You said, "I never considered myself a maverick."
Well, what I was saying was that I have considered myself a person who's a fighter. I wouldn't be around today if I wasn't a fighter. I fight for the things that I believe in, and sometimes that's called a maverick, sometimes that's called a partisan. And people can draw their own conclusions. I prefer great American myself.
As the son and the grandson of military men and as a war hero yourself.
And a son in the Navy.
And a son in the Navy.
One who was in the Marines too.
Your thoughts on Memorial Day?
Oh, the great honor of my life. It was to have had the opportunity long ago and far away to have served in the company of heroes.
I'm the luckiest guy you have ever interviewed and will ever interview. I'm the most fortunate man on earth, and I thank God for it every single day. Thanks for having me on again, Chris. I love our spirited discussions.
Me too, always.
You will remember that John McCain ran for president twice. The last time against Barack Obama. And in the course of that, I will never forget that John McCain's mother, who was the wife of that decorated admiral, his father, and then, of course, his grandfather, but the father. In fact, the USS John McCain is named after his father. It's now been renamed sort of in his honor, just to make that clear, but it was originally his dad. So his mother is just a character, and I really very keenly remember when she would be interviewed on television. And I have to say this, that she was not very flattering to her son, and I remember watching her, and I thought, she's hilarious. So plain spoken. And shortly thereafter, she was no longer in the campaign trail. I do remember this. And I want to give you just a touch of that because it's really pretty amusing. Chris Wallace decides to surprise John McCain with his mother, and this is how it went down.
Republican insiders, senators, say that your big job going forward is to reach out to conservatives. Here's what one McCain insider said the other day.
So can he then go on and become the nominee of this party?
Yes, I think Holder than Those are going to have to take him.
Oh, boy, Senator. Is your mother right? And two, how do you persuade conservatives to stop holding their nose?
I love my mother dearly, more than anything in the world. But really, my mom is not a complete expert on this issue. And I love her, and I love her candor. And she's been a great, great asset, particularly whenever the age issue comes up.
So did you hear what she said? She said they're going to have to hold their nose and take him. That's basically what she said about his candidacy. And that probably explains why she disappeared from the campaign trail. You know, President Trump expressed his deepest sympathies in a tweet after John McCain died. And, of course, you know that they've been at odds for a long time. I'm not going to go into that. You know that probably you remember that I'm not a big fan, but today's not the day to talk about that. John McCain had a great sense of humor. And I remember on the stage with Pastor Rick Warren during the election year for Barack Obama and John McCain, the Republican nominee, John McCain talked about his faith in Christ. I wish we had that clip, but we don't. But I remember him giving a personal testimony. Now, of course, we don't know the hearts of men, but at least I want you to know that. He said that he had prayed to receive Christ. And so all I can say, just in conclusion on that, for right now, may you rest in peace, John McCain. And I hope that is all true, and the battle's over. So may he rest in peace. All right, a lot of things happening. Last week, of course, was a very tough week for President Trump. And we're going to talk about that a little bit later. But as a result of all the things, the indictments, the immunity deals given to people all around him, pretty amazingly, really, just pretty amazing. And I'm going to get into the details. But as a result of that, the Democrats are getting very bold about impeaching the president. And I just wanted to give you an idea of the cacophony. If you're not hearing it, here it is.
Marie, if Democrats win control of the House, will they move to impeach the president?
I think after the last week, it is a conversation worth having that wasn't worth having a week ago, and we're going to have it.
Are impeachment proceedings now more likely than ever?
Should that trigger the start of an investigation in the Judiciary Committee that could end up going to impeachment?
Impeachment.
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 Yeah, so there you go. And of course, that's just a little bit of it. That's their new theme. And of course, others are cautioning, oh, no, don't talk about that because it's not polling well. But you can see there are a lot of things at stake in the midterm elections. I believe I've said that. And tomorrow, two major primaries are taking place, one in the state of Florida and one in the state of Arizona. Now, in Florida, it's an interesting race. The governor's race, Adam Putnam, was very much in the lead until Freedom Caucus member, yes, just forgotten his name, Italian name, yes, I'll think of it in a second, threw his hat in the ring, and President Trump endorsed him. He really is a fearless former Army, Naval, I'm not sure if he's Army or Navy, but he's a veteran. And he's been on television. You've seen him a million times. You guys got to help. Oh, you know what? The guys back in Tupelo don't have internet this morning, so this will be interesting. So they can't help me in any way, but I'll think of it in a second. The veteran was endorsed by the president, and now he's jumped ahead in the race. And of course, there's a race for Senate in Florida as well. Bill Nelson, the former astronaut, although not quite astronaut, I guess he went along for the ride, is being challenged by Rick Scott, who is the current governor. So that's what's happening tomorrow in the state of Florida. Very interesting. And then Arizona. And Arizona, just to lay out what's happening there, I've mentioned often on the Republican side, you have Kelly Ward, who has been the strong conservative. She challenged John McCain the last time he was up for election and had a very good showing. She was a former state senator. I think she got 35%, something like that. And then she decided to challenge Jeff Flake, and immediately the poll showed that she was 30 points above Jeff Flake. And so then the establishment in Washington panicked, and they had Martha McSally, who was a state rep, get into the Senate race. So they are painting Martha McSally. Mitch McConnell and others are pouring millions into that race because they want her to win. Her actual record by the American Conservative Union, Conservative Review, and others is a D or an F, depending on which organization you look at. Voting record doesn't comport with what she's saying publicly. And then, of course, Joe Arpaio at age 86 jumps in, and in his campaign, the only thing he has done is criticize Kelly Ward, which is very curious since Martha McSally is not on his page when it comes to immigration. So it's just kind of a mystery. But, oh, by the way, it's Ron DeSantis. Thank you, Charlotte in Virginia. Thank you very much. It's Ron DeSantis. I just had one of those brain freezes. But this is what I want to say about Arizona. Kristen Sinema is the Democratic candidate, and she has polled above all three Republican candidates repeatedly in the polls. And so Republicans are panicking that Kristen Sinema may be turning Arizona blue. Kristen Sinema is 42 years old. She is a bisexual by her own admission. She has been running as though she's kind of conservative. She throws, you know, she talks about the things she can say about President Trump. She says the work that the president has done on veterans issues has been great. She has hit all the bells and whistles in Arizona because there are a lot of retired veterans down there. And so she's kind of painting herself as a conservative, but of course she was with the Green Party for a number of years, and now that doesn't mean she is not a conservative, but she is polling really well. It's kind of a mystery. And so that's happening tomorrow in Arizona. And I want to give you a few other updates on races around the country. Duncan Hunter, as I mentioned several times last week, of course, has had campaign violations, allegations made against him. He and his wife pled not guilty to charges against them on Thursday. The indictment came up, of course, right before the election when there's no time to replace Duncan Hunter. Paul Ryan rushed to remove Duncan Hunter from all his committee assignments before this has even been adjudicated. Less than 24 hours. I just can't get over that, honestly. But Duncan Hunter was on with Martha McCollum just last week. And he said this of his wife. He said, she was also the campaign manager, so whatever she did, that'll be looked at too, I'm sure. But I didn't do it. I didn't spend any money illegally. You know, this is just speculation on my part, but I remember when I read the details of this, I just, reading between the lines, I thought, this hints to me of a wife who has an out-of-control spending problem, and she has been the campaign chairman for him. You know, and that reminds me, you remember the stories of Abraham Lincoln's wife, Mary? After he died, well, even before he died, she had terrible spending habits and spent them into oblivion, and it was a huge problem. And after he died, she actually went to Congress many, many times for money, and it became a great scandal. I'm not saying that's the case with Duncan Hunter, but it might be. And the interesting thing is the Democratic congressional candidate who's running against Duncan Hunter is Amar Kampa Najjar. And the distinctive about Amar is that his grandfather was a member of the Palestinian Black September terror group that killed those Israeli athletes at the 1972 Olympic Games in Munich. You know, I remember that really well. I was in Berlin, Germany in 1972. And it was just scarring. Some of you are too young to know that, but at the Olympic Games, these Palestinian gunmen murdered several Israeli athletes. And that was the grandson of Amar Kampa Najjar, who was Duncan Hunter's Democratic opponent in this race. It gets interesting. I've got so much more to say. Let me just say 19 foreign nationals have been charged for voting in the 2016 election. That's in North Carolina. Don't tell me that illegal immigrants don't vote. And also, President Trump has endorsed Cindy Hyde Smith in the Mississippi special election against Chris McDaniel, which just shows you that she is the establishment candidate. Chris McDaniel is the rock rib conservative. So we'll see what happens. That race will be the same day as the general, November 6th. I think I got it all in. Okay, I'll be right back. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Netflix continues to ignore the outcry about 13 Reasons Why. The American Family Association, along with Parents Television Council and several other pro-family groups, have reached out to the streaming service, urging the cancellation of their program. Netflix has not even responded to our letter. Instead, they released an even more vile Season 2 and are producing Season 3. Netflix CEO Reed Hastings says their program is engaging and that it fosters discussion of taboo topics like suicide and sexual assault. But at what cost? 14-year-old Anna Bright and several other teens have committed suicide after watching the show. Hastings calls our objections propaganda. Does he feel the profitability of his company is worth more than the lives damaged or lost because of his show? Please sign our petition to Netflix, learn more, and share our action alert when you visit AFA.net. And pray Reed Hastings will recognize the dangers of 13 Reasons Why.
Len Ingram of Redeem Clean felt God call him to support the American Family Association.
I'm a laundryman. I'm the son of a laundryman, too. I love clean clothes. I love the business. I love everything about it. This project was built exclusively to support AFA and AFR. There's no strings attached. Another thing that I would like to see come out of this is that I would like to see other business people feel a calling to support ministries, wherever and whatever they do to share the gospel of Jesus Christ.
In addition to your regular AFA giving, Redeem Clean Laundry Detergent allows you to increase your support of AFA just by continuing to wash your family's clothes. For clean laundry and support of a cleaner society, it's Redeem Clean. Learn more, find options, and get Redeem Clean products at afastore.net. That's afastore.net.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Caitlin Bird. I'm a nursing major and I'm a junior. The School of Nursing here at TMU, it's different than any other, you know, university or college out there. Every time we come into class, no matter which nursing professor it is, we always begin in devotion and prayer, and we become a family. They actually allow the students to get up and do devotion and prayer. We pray with each other and for each other, and that's just what sets us apart from any other school of nursing out there.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
The commander of Edwards Air Force Base is under fire for operating a personal website that encourages Americans to pray at lunchtime. The Military Religious Freedom Foundation filed a scathing complaint against Brigadier General John Tykert, accusing him of violating Pentagon policies regarding religious proselytizing. The general's website is called Pray at Lunchtime for the United States. People are encouraged to intercede on behalf of the president and the military and Congress. But the Military Religious Freedom Foundation accused the general of being a fundamentalist Christian tyrant, a religious extremist predator. Mikey Weinstein is the founder of the organization. He says General Tykert should be thrown in jail for violating the Constitution. Thrown in jail for encouraging people to pray? Sounds to me like the only fundamentalist extremist predator is the Military Religious Freedom Foundation. I'm Todd Starnes.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
I want to get one last question in here because it is a story, a very important story in the news. It has to do with Molly Tibbetts, the young woman in Iowa who was murdered, her body believed to be found yesterday. A person has been charged with it. This person is an undocumented immigrant. Mike Pence and the president have suggested the immigration laws need to be stronger so that people like this man who was accused of this murder were not in the country. Your reaction?
You know, I'm so sorry for the family here, and I know this is hard, not only for the family, but for the people in her community, the people throughout Iowa. But one of the things we have to remember is we need an immigration system that is effective, that focuses on where real problems are. Last month, I went down to the border, and I saw where children had been taken away from their mothers. I met with those mothers who had been lied to, who didn't know where their children were, who hadn't had a chance to talk to their children, and there was no plan for how they would be reunified with their children. I think we need immigration laws that focus on people who pose a real threat, and I don't think mamas and babies are the place that we should be spending our resources. Separating a mama from a baby does not make this country safer.
So the real problems are the separation at the border, not the killing of Molly Tibbetts by an illegal immigrant. Sandy Rios back with you. Don Trump Jr. Tweeted in response to that appearance, yeah, the real problem is not the murder of a young American girl. You can't make this stuff up. Is the left's platform really defend anyone but actually Americans? Rachel Stolfitz tweets, Liz Warren, sorry your daughter is dead, but we need to focus on the law-breaking mom at the border who hasn't seen hers for a few days. And so it turns out, of course, that Elizabeth Warren is one of those prominent Democrats who wants to abolish ICE and talks about how we need to rebuild our immigration system from top to bottom, replacing ICE or destroying it. So there's Elizabeth Warren. And, of course, she's expressing the sentiments of a lot of people on the left. The White House responded by issuing a video, which I want you to hear. Let's listen.
We were permanently separated, not just for a week or a month.
I was at home when I got the phone call from the hospital.
He was hit head-on by a repeat illegal alien criminal.
Known gang member came in the bag and he fired the gun and struck my son in the arm.
Trying to get away, he drove over my son's body. He backed up, driving over him a second time.
Rear-ended is estimated 62 miles an hour.
He strangled him and would let him go to see if he was breathing. Strangled him over and over and over until death. And he dragged Matthew a quarter of a mile to his death.
He rear-ended her, killing her.
He went to a field and put Josh out in the gasoline one and lit him on fire.
Previously deported about a year and a half to 2 years before.
This man wasn't supposed to be here.
My separation
is permanent.
Oh man, of course I've interviewed a few of those moms and dads who have lost their children to illegal immigrants. I'll be interviewing more of them next week at the Radio Row for FAIR. But that's the proper response, because that's you can't exaggerate. It is just true. It's epidemic across the country, from Kate Steinle to names that you've never heard before. Parents are losing their children to illegal immigrant crime. And so there's just no excuse for it. In fact, I want to say that George Rasley of Conservative HQ wrote an article last week that caused quite a storm. We're going to put that on our Facebook page. By the way, we'll put that montage on our Facebook page so that you can share it. But here's George's article in part. He titles it, The Politicians Who Killed Molly Tibbetts. There's a saying among gun owners that guns don't kill people. People kill people. The same thing might be said about illegal aliens. Illegal aliens don't kill Americans. The politicians who let them in and let them stay here kill Americans, like Molly Tibbetts. And we're talking about you, Speaker of House, the House Ryan, Senator Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, Senator Marco Rubio, House Majority Leader Kevin McCarthy, House Majority Whip Steve Scalise, Deputy House Majority Whip Patrick McHenry, and yes, Democrats like you, Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, and California Governor Jerry Brown are the ones who killed Molly Tibbetts, Kate Steinle, Jamil Shaw, Josh Wilkerson, Christy Sue Pena, Grant Ronenbach, Sarah Root, Drew Rosenberg, Sergeant Brandon Mendoza, and thousands of other innocent Americans. And he goes on to talk about Molly Tibbetts was killed so that somebody in Iowa could have cheap labor. And she was killed so that the Business Roundtable, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, and the rest of Washington, Wall Street, Silicon Valley Axis could hit this quarter's earnings target. And most shamefully, she was killed so that virtue signaling liberal politicians could get reelected. And because their bootlickers in the media and their urban elite supporters in the gated communities and the security doored co-ops and condos feel superior to her and the other victims like her and don't think their lives are worth protecting. It's past time for Americans to focus their righteous wrath on the real killers in these cases, the open borders politicians. And it's time to name names and hold them accountable for the thousands of deaths that lie at their feet. Now, that article is very powerful, and again, we'll put it on our Facebook page so that you can share it, but it was so powerful that the New York Times felt obligated to respond, and that the title of their article is Republicans Are Exploiting the Murder of Molly Tibbetts. And I could read it, but I'm not going to because I'm out of time and it's not that, I just don't believe it. Exploiting? I mean, this is a legitimate argument. A 20-year-old girl was murdered brutally by an illegal immigrant only here because someone didn't care. He's been here for, I don't know how long. Was he vetted? Did he have a criminal record in Mexico? Is this the first time he's ever killed someone? We don't know. But the people of Iowa in that little town are prey to the neighboring farm where they don't really know who's there. But now we do know. We know one person that was there, and he was, in fact, a murderer. And that's because politicians have looked the other way on both sides, which is what we've been fighting for so long. We just hope that's why, you know, that's another reason why these midterm elections are so important. There really is so much at stake. And, of course, it's not just, it's really the future of the country, as far as I'm concerned. I don't think that's an overstatement. I just don't think it's an overstatement. And that the left recognizes that. That's why they're, you know, exerting every effort to destroy the president. And again, as much as I like the president, and I do, it's not just about him. It isn't. It's about all of us who love this country and are grateful to him for the policies embraced and implemented, whether it's, you know, enforcing immigration law, enforcing the borders, trying to get stiffer vetting to get people into the country, or all the other decisions that he's made that have affected the economy, to the decisions he's made on the saving of life and the sanctity of human life. It's just amazing the number of things that have happened under this president, and that's what they're trying to stop. They are desperate to stop it. It's funny because my husband and I have been watching a series on the Roman Empire, which is fascination to me. I took 2 years of Latin in high school, and the second year was we read about reading and translating. And so a lot of it was Caesar's writings. It's fascinating. And when you see the politics and the moves and the role of the Senate and the corruption, the similarities are just overwhelming. And that's because man's nature does not change. Man's nature is corrupt, and the corruption is just boringly same all the time. There may be new little ways of fleshing it out, new schemes, but the passion, the drive, the selfishness, the ambition, the greed for power and money, it just doesn't change. You know that last week was a hard week for the president. And immunity agreements were given for people very close to him to testify before Mueller and his prosecutors, among them the Trump Organization's chief financial officer, who is Alan Weisselberg, and I could name a lot of other names. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on those details right this minute, but you know that same day, Michael Cohen, one of his former attorneys, was indicted and pled guilty, and I could go on. It was really a rough week. So now we're hearing that Bob Mueller, the prosecutor, is likely to indict Donald Trump Jr. They're going after him. They're going after him because he held a 20-minute meeting with a fusion GPS operative on Russian adoptions. I mean, that's really not an exaggeration. It's the female attorney, you've heard about it, at Trump Tower, who was working with Fusion GPS, which is the organization that created the tabloid phony dossier on President Trump, hired by Mrs. Clinton at the DNC. So then this Russian attorney just happens to be affiliated with them too, asks for a meeting at Trump Tower, says she has dirt on Hillary Clinton, and then proceeds to talk about Russian adoptions, which is there's a reason for that, but they're all scratching their heads saying, what was that all about? So it looks like the special prosecutor, Bob Mueller, may go after Don Jr. You know, it's just whatever they can do to destroy him, that's what they want to do. And I want to read, because they wanted to destroy us too and our power base, it really makes them angry that we prevailed in the election last time, that the American people rose up and said, you know, actually, no, we don't want an establishment candidate. We want someone who will actually do something. Kim Strassel in the Wall Street Journal has a great piece. I'm going to read just a little bit of it to you. It's titled When Justice is Partial. She says, U.S. Attorney Robert Kuzami took a few moments in his Tuesday statement about Michael Cohen's plea deal to sing neutrality's praise. Quote, his day of reckoning serves as a reminder that we are a nation of laws with one set of rules that apply equally to everyone, end quote. Kimberly says, noble words, and they used to mean something, but a disparity of justice is at the heart of our current crisis of faith in institutions. Americans aren't outraged that the Federal Bureau of Investigation felt obliged to investigate allegations leveled at campaigns or that a special counsel is looking at Russia's electoral interference. They are instead furious that Lady Justice seems to have it in for only one side. The country has watched the FBI treat one presidential campaign with kid gloves, the other with informants, warrants, and eavesdropping. They've seen the Justice Department resist all efforts at accountability, even as it fails to hold its own accountable. And don't get them started on the one-sided media. I'm not going to go into the details of this. I was going to, but we're going to put this article on our Facebook page because it's certainly worth sharing. It's Sandy Rios in the Morning, by the way. When Justice is Impartial by Kimberly Strassel, she goes through and cites the various ways that the Clinton faction of the election was treated versus the Trump. It's pretty stunning to review it, actually. And then, of course, there are all these calls for Attorney General Sessions to leave. People are very upset. They don't think he's doing anything. They're asking him to step aside, and that's a story in itself. But I want to share a couple of things with you just to give you some perspective on this. First of all, please, did you notice that it's only FBI personnel that have stepped down and resigned, and they've actually cleansed quite a few, certainly compared to the Justice Department, who have cleansed no one. Bruce Orr is still there. Bruce Orr, Mary Tinelli Orr, who was working with Fusion GPS using a ham radio to do we're not sure what. Some people think that Nelly was actually the one. She's very closely connected with Russia. She lived in Russia. She really loves Russia. She's even made an apology for Stalin, like a covering up for his behavior. So there's just something rotten, very rotten in Denmark. Bruce Orr bypassed the FBI and permission to communicate with Christopher Steele. Just a lot of nefarious stuff going on. Okay, so people are asking, who's going to go after all these other things for the Clinton with the Clinton scandal? Who's going to go after Senator Feinstein and her security breach? She had a Chinese spy working for her for over 20 years, for heaven's sake. How about the Uranium One scandal, where 20% of our uranium was sold to the Russians because of Hillary Clinton and her leadership at the State Department? And then the Clinton Foundation did very well as a result of that financially. Who's going to investigate that? So here's what, now this is inside baseball, but I think you need to know this. Here's the thing. My people, my friends tell me that the game here is to get rid of Attorney General Sessions so that Rod Rosenstein will be put in charge. Because Attorney General Sessions is working on immigration enforcement, as opposed to amnesty, we all know that, and criminal justice opposition. Those are both really unpopular with the GOP leaders. In other words, as you know, General Sessions was a champion in the Senate on immigration, and he's using a lot of his resources right now to make those laws apply and to sort of bring order back into that system. He's also opposed to the criminal justice proposals, which I have not talked about with you in a very long time, but I will. And that's being cheerleaded by a lot of the Republican leadership. Also, we know, I've mentioned this, but it's been a very long time, that there are investigations going on in FBI offices, not in D.C., out in the country, Little Rock, Salt Lake City. Those are investigations into the dealings of some of the things we're talking about, but they're not being handled by D.C. centrically, which is a great gift. That's one of the things that General Sessions is doing. So if General Sessions is fired, Rod Rosenstein will move up to the acting attorney general. And that will not be good. Let's just say everything that's happening will turn back. And they will not be able to confirm anyone anywhere near the integrity and the same values as conservatives if General Sessions is fired or steps aside. Just saying. So that's gives you a fuller picture, I hope, of the dangers here. And we'll talk about that more, too, when we get to talk about it more in the future. We have a special guest coming up, and so I'm going to leave politics for a minute. We have actually a fun segment coming up, so I hope you'll stay tuned. This is Sandy Rios in the Morning on AFR Talk.
so that they wore themselves out groping for the door. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. In spite of the recent Supreme Court victory for cake artist Jack Phillips, the Colorado Civil Rights Commission has Jack in their crosshairs once again. On June 26, 2017, the same day SCOTUS agreed to hear the Masterpiece Cake Shop case, an attorney asked Jack Phillips to design a cake that was pink on the inside and blue on the outside to celebrate a gender transition from male to female. Jack declined. That design violates his religious beliefs about sex and gender identity. Now, the Colorado Civil Rights Commission has found it probable that Jack has unlawfully discriminated, so they're after him again.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner. For more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. Can Donald Trump survive the storm that is engulfing him? There's a lot at stake here, since the president is the toughest bare-knuckle fighter we've ever had in the White House. And he's fighting for good things: the sanctity of life, religious liberty, a strong military, a secure border, and a vibrant economy. The regressive left hates him because they know that he poses the greatest threat to their agenda in a generation. That's why they are determined to remove him from office or cripple him. There's no one else in Washington, D.C. that they have any reason to fear. Just about the only defenders he has left are members of his base. For the sake of the country, let's hope and pray that will be enough.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
80% of the time, an abortion-minded mother who views an ultrasound or sonogram of her baby will choose life. Here's the story of Candace.
The sonogram sealed the deal for me. My baby was like this tiny little spectrum of hope. And I saw his heart beating on the screen. And knowing that there's life growing inside, I mean, that sonogram changed my life. I went from just Candace to mom. Thank you to everybody that has given these gifts. You guys are giving more than money. You guys are giving love.
There are currently preborn centers which do not have an ultrasound machine. Would you sponsor a machine today? Dial pound 250 and say keyword baby. That's pound 250 and say baby. Or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com. Your love can save a life.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. The death of my old friend John McCain evoked mixed emotions. On the one hand, there is a sense of bittersweet happiness for the senator and his family that the suffering which marked his final years is at an end. On the other hand, I'm saddened that John's passing evidently was not accompanied by an acknowledgement of a serious strategic error he made, let alone an apology to someone he very uncivilly wronged in the process. In 2012, Senator McCain took to the Senate floor to denounce then-Representative Michelle Bachmann for having posed, officially, entirely legitimate questions about the Muslim Brotherhood's influence on and penetration of the U.S. government. That attack contributed to Ms. Bachmann's premature departure from Congress. Worse, it chilled to this day the necessary oversight of and response to our Sharia supremacist enemies, domestic as well as foreign. This is Frank Affney.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Sandy Rios back with you. You can see that there are lots of mixed feelings about Senator McCain. And it was interesting to hear Frank's commentary, the reminder of that other thing. This, you know, it's hard to know when a person dies. I remember this story from a long time ago. In a small town, the most wicked guy in the town died. And nobody really was concerned about that. They weren't really moved, but they knew they had to go to the funeral. And so the pastor tapped one gentleman. He said, can you just say something nice? And he said, I don't know. He said, just say one thing that's nice. And the man stood up and said, well, he sure could whistle. And so that's the way that funeral went. And I think it's hard when somebody passes and you have a lot of really strong feelings about some of the things they did in life. It's hard to know how to address that. But as I said to you this morning, my view is just, may he rest in peace. I hope that the testimony that he gave to Rick Warren on the stage when he was running for president reflects the reality. And we wish nothing but comfort for his family as they try to, you know, assess and process his loss, because he is a big personality and he was funny. And I'm sure that he will be greatly missed by his family. All right, speaking of family, you know, we talk about news and politics all the time, but we're going to have some fun here. I'm actually looking forward to this conversation because I have 4 grandchildren. But you knew that, right? I got Moses 9, Kate 6, Asa 4, and Lucy 1 year. If you listen to AFR Talk, which I do a lot of times on Saturday afternoons when I'm putzing around, not thinking about politics, there is a show called Parenting Today's Teens. It's on Saturday afternoon at 4:30 p.m. Central Standard Time, and it's hosted by a gentleman named Mark Gregston, who joins us this morning. Good morning, Mark.
Hey, Sandy, how are you? It's good to be here.
I'm good. Mark is the founder of Heartlight Ministries, which is one of the country's finest residential counseling centers for teens. And it's known throughout North America as the place to be if your teen is struggling and hope is diminishing. Mark has authored 12 books, and he's written hundreds of articles about parenting teens in a difficult culture. I have to say, I'm so grateful I don't have teens right now. But Mark, do you have teens?
You know, I've got teen grandchildren, as a matter of fact. I've got a 17-year-old granddaughter, a 13-year-old, and the other one's 7, and then I've got another one. I don't know how old she is. But they're great.
It's confusing.
They're
great. I know. Yeah. Well, this particular book that you've written is called Leaving a Legacy of Hope, Parents' Influence, Grandparents Leave a Legacy. What Will You Be Remembered For by Your Grandchildren? And that whole title, of course, was intriguing to me, Mark. Let me ask you this. I know that you're a grandfather, and you just said that you got some teenagers. What are you seeing? What's a trend that you're seeing with today's youth and their grandparents? Just in general, what kind of things are you seeing?
Well, you know, probably a couple of things that I think are important is that I think that teens today, I mean, they all live in a culture that you and I have said, and everybody that's listening has said, I'm glad that I don't have to grow up in this culture. Well, our kids do. And I think that, you know, the preface in the book is God is keeping each one of us around a little bit longer and allowing us to take that gray hair. You know, Scripture says that gray hair is the glory of old men. And because he needs wisdom being poured into the life of teens. And so my observation is that these kids need all the help they can get. And there's so many grandparents out there that have so much wisdom. It's helping them kind of connect with these kids that are so disconnected from one another and from those people in authority, and 85% of them leaving the church upon graduation from high school. They need wise, biblically principled people to engage with them and engage in such a way that they're offering them something that nobody else can.
I'm going to borrow your words because you wrote, teens today are stuffed with information, yet starving for wisdom. They act distant, but the truth is they need you now more than ever. Explain that, Mark.
Well, yeah, I mean, information, it's absolutely amazing how much information there is. When you and I grew up, information doubled, codified information doubled every 13 years. I mean, it's just the amount of written information. It is now doubling every hour and a half. Next year, it will double instantaneous. And so our kids are full of information. It's not just 2 radio channels they listen to. There's thousands of them. There's different ways of music. They don't have just 3 channels on a TV. They've got 900 channels. I mean, so there's so many different ways of finding more and more information. And what's happening, our kids are just filled up with information that they're cutting people off if that's all they're doing is sharing information. I mean, it's a call and a challenge to parents to say, quit sharing information all the time and start sharing your wisdom that you know. And you know, even a fool appears wise when he keeps his mouth shut. You know, if you don't have wisdom, ask God for that. But it's not just the program of saying, you know, I need to tell you these things so you can get it right. It's sharing why you have these principles, why they've been poured into your life, and how they apply to the culture that you live in, not the one that I live in. And that's a challenge for a lot of parents and grandparents to engage, because usually we're spending our time telling kids, don't do this, don't do this, don't do this. What we need to be telling them is how you do this and how you engage so that they know how to apply all those biblical principles and values and morals that we've instilled in them at an early age.
You know, Mark, I'm experiencing what you're just describing. By the way, I love your chapter titles, Changing Gears When You're Almost Out of Gas, Why Gray Hair Works to Your Benefit, Making Memories Before You Lose Yours, Losing Battles But Winning Wars, and Don't Save the Best for Last. Mm. I love those chapter titles. But I want to tell you a funny story. My 6-year-old granddaughter, I was bathing her when I was with them last. They live in Scotland, so I don't get to see them often. But I was bathing her, and then she started to open up with me about her boyfriend. Grandma, don't tell anyone. I'm only telling you. And she's telling me this. And I said, I mused that, Kate, I probably won't get to be at your wedding, honey. I wish I could, but Grandma probably won't live that long. And I said, but here's the thing, Kate, when you choose your husband, he must love Jesus. Because if he loves Jesus, he'll love you more. He'll be a better husband. So that was the end of the conversation. And the next day, she spent hours preparing a wedding for her stuffed rabbits. Hmm. And she was, you know, she had a little tea set out. She had all of these things, and she sent out invitations. It was kind of funny, and I was the flower girl. So when we went up for the for the wedding in her room, you know, I'm walking up kind of slowly, you know, like the wedding pace, and she stops everything, and she runs up to me, and she says, Grandma, they both love Jesus. Hmm. And it just struck me, Mark, the power of that one phrase.
It is, you know, and that works. It works so well during those first 12 years of a child's life because that's the teaching time. I think the challenge for most parents is, okay, when they're 13, 14, 15, how do I help them move from concrete thinking to abstract thinking? And when they come back and say, okay, Grandma, how do I really do that then? It's not just telling them. Now it's saying, this is the purpose. This is the need. This is why I would challenge you. This is what I've learned by my observation, my reflection, and my experience. This is what I've seen. So I think they believe it, but they want to know how to apply it. And I think that's where many of us, you know, probably get stuck in saying, okay, I've got to figure out how to help them engage what they value and what they believe in. And it's different than when they were giving me coffee mugs that said world's greatest mom and world's greatest grandmother and T-shirts that say all that. It's when they're struggling through that and the impact of the culture is greatly affecting them and influencing them, that's when the value of wisdom comes in and is so greatly needed.
Do you think that today's young parents understand the need for grandparents in raising their children?
No, because they know it all. And I say that not in a negative way by any means. Most parents feel like they know it all because the kids are applauding them and following them and doing everything they want. You know, wait until the challenges come, and then they're going to be grabbing for anything around them. And what they don't know is that grandparents can have an amazing influence because of the connection within a family. There truly is. There's something a grandparent can offer that nobody else can because it comes with history and legacy. And John Wesley said, you know, that truth is sometimes based on tradition as well. And that's what a grandparent can bring to the table. I don't think God's letting us all live a little bit longer so we can move to Florida and Arizona just to play shuffleboard, you know, and that's no offense to anybody that lives in Arizona or Florida. It's just saying that God has a plan to continue to use you, and it's important to learn how to engage with these kids, and that's what the book is all about, and to help them say, this is how you can learn to engage with them in a different way so that your message of hope is appealing to their hearts.
By the way, the book is called Leaving a Legacy of Hope, Parents Influence, Grandparents Leave a Legacy. What will you be remembered for by your grandchildren? And you can get it at heartlightministries.org. That's heartlightministries.org. ministries.org. We'll put the link on our Facebook page. We're not done talking, but I just wanted to interject that. I'm curious about this, Mark. Where do you think the line is, if you were to draw a line, between parenting and grandparenting?
I don't think grandparents ought to be parents. They shouldn't act like parents unless they have to parent a child because they've taken over that role. But for the most part, I think parents need to do the discipline, the correction, all those things. And a grandparent, they're in that position where they can spoil kids like crazy, where they can engage with them. You know, when my grandkids walk in the door, I don't correct them. I don't tell them, hey, you're not wearing the right thing. You shouldn't be listening to that music. You shouldn't this. I don't do any of that. I want to provide a place of rest for them. When Jesus said, come to me, all who are weary and heavy laden, and you will find rest for your soul. That's what I want them to find. And I long for the time that they come back to me asking questions. Hey, Papa, what do you think about this? My granddaughter wrote me a few weeks ago, and she said, Papa, when you get back in town, can we go eat dinner? Just you and me? Just you and me? Yeah. And she goes, can we go? I need to talk to you about something. And I think what happens is that sometimes we are so concerned about making sure we get our message of life across that we forget that we need to be listening to them a lot more than they need to be listening to us. And when we do, we begin to understand the challenges they face, not just through the observations that we have. I mean, I live with 60 high school kids that come from all over the country. And we've lived with over 3,000 kids. And you learn real quick that one of the key elements of all of this is making sure we're listening to the heartbeat of our teens so that we can offer them and learn how to apply those values that we hold so dear.
Is there some example that you've seen with your own eyes of a grandparent and their grandchildren, just that you think is just a great example of what you're trying to flesh out in your book?
Well, you know, sadly, you usually see the legacy that somebody leaves after they're gone. And in particular, there was one man that I started to read. While I was writing the book, I started to read the legacy that he left. And his grandkids were the ones who were saying all those things that were so positive. And you start to realize, you know, they don't remember the things that you've given them. They don't remember how you cook certain food. That's not the issue. It's that he loved me. He cared for me. He was always there. He listened to me. He gave me advice. He was always hopeful. He helped me get through hard times. It's all about the relationship. And I think any kid that's in this culture needs those relationships desperately. And, you know, I mean, I love my grandkids. I think grandkids are a reward for not killing your own kids. And I mean, my daughter always says, Dad, it's like you like them more than us. And I go, well, I do. I just like them a lot more. And so I think there's that special role, and we have to work hard to make sure we maintain a position in their life after they turn 12 or 13, because their life gets busy. And if we're not connected with them, we'll be the ones that are pushed out. We'll be the ones that will be on the sidelines. And when they speak at their weddings, they'll only be able to talk about things that happened when they were 6 to 10 years old. I want to remain engaged as long as I breathe. And that's kind of the goal of this.
All right. So if you like what you're hearing, and I'm sure you do, especially grandparents and parents too, I just think you need to understand the importance of your parents in your children, your children's lives. Of course, Mark hosts Parenting Today's Teens, which is heard Saturday afternoons at 4:30 Central on American Family Radio. And this book is Leaving a Legacy of Hope, Parents' Influence, Grandparents Leave a Legacy. And if you'd like to order that book, you can do it by going to heartlightministries.org. That's heartlightministries.org. Mark, it's great to have some time with you this morning.
Thank you so much. You bet.
God bless you. Okay. Sandy Rios on a Monday in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.